This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, June 1st, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. When terrorists kill people in Manchester as they leave a concert, we worry and we feel compassion. When terrorists kill people in Afghanistan, we tend to worry less and consider those lives less seriously, if at all. To the extent that the U.S. contributes to the lack of stability in countries like Afghanistan, it's reasonable for us to step back and view American war-making for what it is. Chris Preble, Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, offers his thoughts. As of this recording, it was not quite a week ago when we heard about an explosion, terrorism, at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, UK. And then earlier this week, we hear about a bombing in Afghanistan, also terrorism, that killed, as far as we know right now, about 90 people. And the way that those two events have been discussed is just very different. And that strikes me as a problem.
Right. So I think there are at least two somewhat exclusive or at least distinct explanations for why the news media reports terrorism attacks and terrorism deaths differently depending upon who the victims are. The first has to do with the news media's sort of biological inclination to cover things that are new or different or surprising. Man bites dog, right? That's the cliche. And so the tragic fact is that terrorist attacks inside of Afghanistan or, for that matter, inside of war-torn countries, Syria, Iraq, Somalia, others, countries that have experienced very long periods of lawlessness, terrorist attacks inside of those countries are perhaps not quite routine but certainly not uncommon. And so reporting on a bombing, even when it claims a considerable number of lives, as the most recent one did, is less likely to be seen as news, frankly. It's not as newsworthy as, by contrast, an attack at a pop concert in a major Western city. Thankfully, terrorist attacks in outside of war zones are quite rare, and so it doesn't surprise me or frankly trouble me all that much if that is the main explanation for why we cover terrorist attacks in major Western cities differently than we do terrorist attacks in Central Asia or the Middle East or North Africa.
And some of this is, you know, there have been, horrific deaths in, the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
in
yes.
China,
yes.
In the 20th century. And in the West, we have come to know about those things often years after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it seems a problem that is fairly intractable, which is it's hard to have a lot of reporters in war zones,
mm-hmm. sure.
who are able to talk about the hopes and dreams and aspirations of young people who are killed the same way that we would about teenage girls or preteen girls in Manchester.
Sure, that's absolutely correct. And again, that's no fault of reporters who try, and often at great risk to themselves, to try to cover precisely those sorts of stories because they're hard to get, but their access is without question, it's much easier to cover a story in Paris or St. Petersburg or Berlin or Manchester.
So it seems to the extent that the problem is intractable, it seems natural that this kind of thing will continue where some lives that are struck by terrorism are as far as a news consumer is concerned, more important than others.
Right. But that's where I'd highlight my second explanation for why people react to different people's deaths differently. And that is terrorism functions because of its apparent randomness and its apparent sort of ubiquity. Again, we should pause and recall that terrorist incidents are exceedingly rare. However, the fear that at any moment someone could be a victim of terrorism is what makes terrorism work, or why people are so frightened, so much more frightened of terrorism than they are of other things that are far more likely to kill them. And so thinking about Manchester, the reaction of many Americans looking at an American pop singer and the audience that she attracted would be not so different at all, frankly, from an audience that she would sing before in Chicago or Los Angeles or New York or, you know, Worcester, Massachusetts. And in that sense, the perception that that could have been my daughter, that could have been my sister, is much more pronounced than it is when the attack occurs in a place like Afghanistan, which to most Americans is very distant, obviously not to people of Afghan descent living in the United States, but to the vast majority of Americans who have no Central Asian ancestry, it looks even more distant than anything else. And so that's, I think, a somewhat separate explanation for why we react differently. It's not merely a function of news coverage and what is reported, but it's also a function of how we as human beings react to a violence perpetrated against people who are like us. I would make a small not so much an exception, but I would make sort of add a caveat to the level of concern that Americans have or arguably should have for the plight of Afghan civilians who are victims of terrorism or their obviously family members of terrorist victims. And that is that when Colin Powell famously warned George W. Bush that if we go into Iraq, you know, we will own Iraq, the United States at some level is implicated in what is happening in a place like Afghanistan, where the United States has been involved not merely for the last 16 years, not merely since 9/11, but of course the United States had a very important role to play in the 1980s. And so I think there's an additional factor in terms of whether or not we do and should pay attention to what happens in places like Afghanistan or Iraq, where the United States was present in large numbers, as opposed to a place like Democratic Republic of Congo, where we have not been and we are not in any way implicated. And I think at a minimum, we should ponder that fact that if you break it, you own it. And therefore, my takeaway from that is don't break it. But of course, quite a number of other people would take an entirely different perspective, which is it's going to be broken anyway, so we might as well fix it.
It almost seems as if the only hope in making these deaths in war zones, deaths that are victims of terrorism, let's be clear, it seems that social media is one of the only ways that I am aware of that can possibly bring these people's lives and have Americans and other people who are tacitly allowing these wars to continue bring attention to these lives that do matter.
Right. I agree with that. I think there is a sort of there is a crowdsourcing element of this that could work fairly well. I wrote after the Manchester bombing and sort of dwelling on a number of other mass killings, some of which we call terrorism, others of which we don't, that the worst possible thing we can do is celebrate the perpetrators of these acts. One of the best things we can do is remember the victims and remember their lives and then, I hope, allow that remembrance to not become a shell, you know, a sort of withdrawing into a shell and saying, that's never going to happen to me because I'm never going to go to a concert again. That's never going to happen to me because I'm never going to go to, a marathon again. Those sorts of responses are precisely the wrong sorts of responses. They're the responses that the perpetrators of these acts want. And so my approach and that of others of us who've written about this at Cato over many years is to deny by force of will that which the terrorists most want, which is to frighten us. It's harder. It's much easier said than done, but it does take an act of will even at a very individual level. And I think that as you say, sort of social media and crowdsourcing can help to focus on what matters, which is living our lives as free people and not succumbing to fear.
Chris Preble is Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.